bring it up to 2017 reentry for 2017, which I wanted to. I really wanted it to for at least the 2017 breeding season. I brought it up in December. Now, I didn't know Rock and Roll Heaven was coming in. I didn't know that till about a week before Christmas. So when I, December 8th, I had no clue he was coming in here. I was just trying to fix a problem that we had, what I called the Lucky Chucky rule. And I think by bringing this up and trying to, you know, everybody, you know, saying that the reentry rule we're going to approve, you know, we're going to allow it for 17, even though we didn't get the vote on it, at least I brought it up. So that's how Rock and Roll Heaven is coming into this breeding season.
It's following a rule that's been a recognized practice for 10 years, right? So that, that's where we're at, is that, you know, regardless of whether we can produce what the gentlemen that were all here before us, that unfortunately many of them don't exist anymore, this was something that they did every year. And when those conditions were printed every year for public to see them, they acknowledged what was written in front of them, and they said they were good with that, right, every year.
And there's never been, you know, an exception noted in the record. There's nothing that says that there was any controversy, you know, that where they said no, this shouldn't be. So, yes, by it appearing that frequently, you know, it had to have been endorsed.
Can I ask a question about the statutory change? So before the statutory change, if I was an outside resident, as a Pennsylvania resident, and my stag come to New York, it would not be eligible unless it was here under a 10-year lease.
Correct.
Am I reading this correctly?
Yeah,
and
right.
Then now it's changed. I'm a Pennsylvania resident. I send my stallion here. He only has to be here a year.
It doesn't matter. Whatever breeding season is now, they can come in. At the end of the year, they can leave. They can come back.
So what, I'm just trying to figure this out. So what was the reason for the 10-year versus the 1 year? I mean, why did they wanted that stallion to be residing here? Because it brought economic growth to wherever that stallion was standing?
Exactly. There was stability. There was a commitment to the New York program. So it really was a way to make sure that, as noted in the mission of entire breeding law, was that fostering a breeding economy through tenure leases. And so there was a long-term commitment to keep the horse here.
And so has the industry changed so much to where
tremendously.
Because that sounds fundamentally like a good thing for Mag and Martin, for agriculture's perspective, but now you're saying no one leases their stallions for 10 years.
Is that the boys and girls had to be in the same room to make a baby before. These laws are so old that they supersede artificial insemination. And the science changed everything. So the reality is now the girls are way more important than the boys. And so we have money available for the broodmares and our breeders' awards, which are 100% residency now. If that gets paid out, those mares have to be here 180 days plus be inseminated in the state of New York. So wherever the boys are isn't nearly as impactful on the agricultural environment as where the mares are. Because, and the extremely economic stallions, a lot of them travel overseas. To down under Australia and New Zealand. We freeze semen on the trotters. Some of that's done in state. Some of them pay the fee and leave and have it done in other places with our permission. But the biggest change really occurred in the, I'd say, early 70s, extreme early 70s, when Hal Jones came from Ohio. He's basically the father of artificial insemination. And as we started breeding these mares not live cover, it made it very different for where the stallions are. And the law never caught up to that. And so things like, you know, the grant policy or all these policies that get changed and looked at are, in many cases, things that happened rules that were written 40, 50 years ago, when the VLTs came to be, we had huge brawls at harness horse breeders over what the qualifying standards should be. And, you know, same thing, the quality and quantity of the horses that were coming was going to change so dramatically following the money that our times were, in many cases, 10 or 15 seconds wrong for qualifying standards. And so I just don't think we've kept up is the biggest difference.
Well, let me ask this question. What about, because I think I was here when we first put in place the residency requirements for the, I think that was back whenever, I think I was involved in that. Is it, how does that compare to other states, and is that something that we should be looking at? Because from the agricultural perspective, if the mayor's it, should we be doing something to, I mean, is 180 days enough time? I mean, how does that compare to other states?
In other states, New York State has a non-interstate ship semen policy. So in New York, you have to bring the mare physically within our boundaries to be bred. And if she leaves and goes back to Canada, then her foal will not be eligible to a now $1 million pool.
If she leaves before 180 days.
She leaves before 180 days.
Right.
But 180 days is a lot of time to be caring for the horses, trimming the horses, the vet care for the horses, paddocks for that horse to be in, grain and hay and services, and we feel that it is encouraging agriculture in New York, not so much that it restricts somebody from bringing their highest quality mares. They will tell you it does, but it really doesn't. And still allowing them to potentially breed to another successful stallion somewhere else. If we force them to be here the entire 365 days, it then creates problems on what you do the next year and the next year, and it's a bit restrictive. It's been, I think, industry-wide to be kind of the barometer of the 180 days. Our policy on not shipping semen meets a lot of disapproval from people that don't have addresses that have a NY at the end of them. People would like to participate and get all the benefits of our New York product without having boots on the ground, without owning a farm or paying somebody who owns a farm in the state of New York.
Is there any guarantee that that mare is going to foal in New York? Or can she just be bred and shipped somewhere else to have her baby?
She can be bred here and shipped out.
Well, I just, you know, I don't know.
That's,
I mean,
the way, that's the way. That's why they did the 180-day residency to try to keep them in. We went from performance and residency to 100% residency.
Can she? Is it from the time she's bred, or can they bring her in? You know,
because
she's
going
to try to cover her, so they can bring
first
her
ahead.
First of January.
And then
so
180 days, which brings us what, into June, is it?
She leaves, and she doesn't have her foal until
following January, February, March, whenever they get her in full.
So she's it's only her.
Right.
It's only her for,
in a lot of cases,
two.
It's her and her last fall, though, too, in a lot of cases.
Right.
You know, so we're getting, you know, as compared to where we used to be before these full residency, you know, there was a time that you'd get everything and we were 50%, and then we moved it this until we got to the full residency a little bit at a time. But it's a huge carrot. It's not realized, I think, industry-wide yet. This will be the first year we are paying out 100% residency on the two-year-olds. The three-year-olds will still be split in half. But we've moved this up from about 600,000 4 years ago, each year a little bit more, while making it more restrictive. The checks that people are going to start getting are going to be quite large. And we're hoping it encourages more people to want that as opposed to not in the future. But it's a program we've been working on. I think that as people outside the state see it, they'll realize it's a real thing.
What is the residency requirement for other states like Pennsylvania? What's a PA?
I said Pennsylvania, 180 days too.
Pennsylvania is 180 days, but theirs surrounds foaling,
right?
Because they have ship semen. And the Kentucky, which has no stallions, has 180 days, and you can be by anybody's doubt. If you establish residency in Kentucky, you're eligible to their program. So you can be a New York bred and a Kentucky eligible if you reside in Kentucky without having a Kentucky stallion, because there's so few of them.
I'm using everybody else's stallions to help do their...
Now, that'll prove to be very interesting in that they have some money, but they don't have nearly as much money as other programs, and they're going to have a huge amount of horses. So now you're going to find that, you know, what they're actually... There'll be a few horses that win their finals that make money, but it really needs to be a secondary-based program because there isn't enough money to drive it on its own.
I mean, couldn't you structure a program to, I mean, to further complicate it to where the longer you have increments, the mares that they're keeping there through foaling gets a greater financial reward than somebody that just brings them in, breeds them, and takes them out to have their baby. I mean, the economics is when she's having her baby.
But the economics used to be that you would ship a mare into New York State and she'd be here for, at the farm, she was getting bred at for 20 minutes, never get off the truck, get inseminated, and leave. And New York would get zero agricultural benefit out of that, and we were basically giving the world away. We did away with breeders' awards and four-year-old sire stakes when the money went this way, prior to the VLTs. Once we got the VLTs back, there was discussion about putting four-year-old racing back in. Overnight racing was so strong because of purses, we didn't do that. But we did have the right to put back breeders' awards up to 10%, I think. Is that right? Up to 10%, which we're not taking up to 10%. I think the whole program at this time has worked its way up to $1 million, which is at least at this time less than 10%. But, you know, we're trying to help do both. It is considered industry-wide that our ship semen policy is incredibly restrictive. And I think that if we do too much, you know, if we were ever to explore a greater breeders' award situation, we would have to do something on the other end, which is in giving up that ship semen policy, which is a very slippery slope. I do not believe we have enough money to sustain changing the ship semen policy. I used to feel different. It was beaten to my head that I was wrong. I was wrong. If we change the ship semen law, we will create way more New York breds. If we dilute the money we have by twice as many New York breds, there is not enough money to sustain the program and it will go away. We will have way more horses in New York that are cold New York breds and way less horses that exist here. And they'll take advantage of other programs. The people that are asking us to change that policy all live somewhere else. Every one of them lives somewhere outside of New York State and has no desire to push New York agriculture. And that's one of the biggest wolves at the door that we look at. And every year they're coming more and more and more. And, you know, we have to be very careful in trying to push the short-term dollar and what it's going to do to our agricultural boundaries, because it's dangerous for sure.
Just one thing on the 10-year to the 1-year lease. This came about in my first meeting when I came on in February of 14. And at that time, we were having the problem with If I Can Dream and the leases with that stallion. And once I came on, I got some papers from some lawyers, from Alice's lawyers, and I have a deposition from Betty that testified as an expert witness on this. And Betty said that we need to have a 10-year lease, and she said why, and this and that. And then all of a sudden, a year later, we're changing to 1-year lease. But I think a lot of it, part of it's what Mike says, it will be easier with 1-year lease to bring it in. But I think this is one of the reasons why they wouldn't sign these leases, because they didn't want to keep these horses in here for 10 years. So I think this is one of the reasons some of the leases didn't get signed. And that was one of the reasons why I think they went after to change it to 1 year. I mean, make it easier.
I mean, but the concept behind it, I don't want to belabor it, the concept behind it was that the stallion was here so he generated economic activity, brings about the mares here.
Well, and the other thing, if you read Bennett, was, see, I just saw it new to me, but by reading her deposition, was the reason one of the 10-year leases was a horse, it takes 4 or 5 years to get the money for the breeding farm to kind of regroup some of this. You know, it's not in and out in a year. It takes years to kind of get the money back. But the other thing was, by reading that, was if the horse packed up and left and went out of state, then if they owed the farm any money, you got no recourse, you know. But it got changed to 1 year, and that's where we are today, which I don't think we'll have a problem with everybody signing leases. But like you said, yeah, a stallion can come in. At the end of the breeding season, he can leave, you know. And if he wants to come back, you know, 2 years later, 1 year later, whatever, he'll be able to, you know, come back and forth. They're not here to stay for 10 years. And this was only for stallions that were either owned by a syndicate, were out of state. Now, if you were a New York owner with a stallion, he only had to have 1 year lease. So he had some stallions that were underneath a 1 year lease. Other stallions had to be underneath a 10-year lease. And I'm not a commercial breeder, but I mean, it got changed, and you know, this was all done, you know, when I first came on. But the problem is, why we weren't updated with any of this stuff. We had a meeting in February of 14 when I came on, and we never had another meeting until October. So all this stuff, and the rule got changed, and here we are, you know. So
I'd be interested in seeing whatever you guys have on the residency requirement. I mean, whatever document, what writes out what it is.
I'd be curious as well. I want to see I was told, and I can't remember who told me, someone in the legislature, or if it was one of our board meetings, that the 10-year lease was a disincentive, that people weren't bringing their horses up here because it required a 10-year lease. So I think it's something that we need to be tracking to see if there's increased activity over 1-year leases. If the population expands and that there's a better pool of staff, and you're absolutely right, you know, they need to be here. That's what we're pushing. This program needs presence in New York, and that's what we should be driving forward.
I'd be curious on that too. But this 180 days, we've written. I know there's somewhere I can go in the old files if there was something written about the mayor having to be here for 180 days. I just like to see whatever the program is and the requirements.
Well, we have an opportunity to look at this every year. But, you know, as an aside, I think
the only problem is with the 10-year and 1-year lease, that's under the Laverne law. We can't change that.
Right.
So they had to go back, and that's the first time that law was ever changed.
Exactly.
And I was surprised it got changed so easily. You know, I mean, February we were talking about it, and July it was rolling past, and it was like it just came in and went. And it didn't take long.
But if you were to bring in on the economic side of it, if you're trying to encourage somebody to bring in a $4 million horse, which is a lot of money, and he's owned by a bunch of different people, you syndicate the horse, and you get the horse basically paid for over the course of 4 years. In the process of doing this, and the horse is having a good run, he's being supported, and something happens and you have decoupling and there's no longer any money set aside for that stallion to exist in the state of New York. That could happen. If somebody's making an investment into a multi-million dollar business deal, and you tell them the funding, the carrot in front of you, could go away, but you're going to stay there 6 more years, nobody's ever pulling the trigger on doing that business deal. If that horse fails to be competitive in his marketplace, and there's another place you can take him where he could be competitive. Magical Mike was a leading stallion in New York for years. When the VLT law changed and he got more competitive stallions here and became less significant, and the ownership group first moved him to another farm and then wanted to move him to Ohio so he could be competitive and have a job. He'd be allowed to do that. If there was a lease stopping him from doing that, it would be, you know, be a problem. So in the modern way of doing things on the commercial side, creating too many restrictions just makes people do business somewhere else. And you know, biologically, you know, you can have a horse that you bring in, you think it's going to be okay, and guess what? His biological limitations are this horse is going to breed 60 mares, and people realize, oh, darn, I made an investment here, it's wrong. Maybe I can recoup it in a smaller market. This is a big marketplace, New York. And the program as is, the $16 million that's run here, they run for a lot of money, but it's hard. And so other places, you know, are easier venues. Or, you know, if somebody is unsuccessful, not every horse, guy brings a horse and he owns him himself. Mr. Bellino didn't take rock and roll heaven out of the state because he thought New York fell down. His horse bred. He refused to syndicate his stallion. He didn't have enough support. So every year he had to get 140 breedings to that horse. He made a miscalculation. Whatever the reasons he left when he only got 40-some-odd foals in the crop that was produced in 2015, or the breeding season of 15, took him to Jersey for a year. Well, Jersey was a bad play. He thought he'd be the only horse there. There's no business in New Jersey. Created 40 foals there last year. What do I do? Now I've destroyed myself commercially. Well, I've got a following in New York. I guess I'll go home. I'll go back to New York. That's how that horse ends up back here. We've talked possibly doing something down the road, not retrofitting something, to make it easier for a guy to come back. One, makes the bookkeeping part on our side easier, and we want horses to be able to do such a thing. But we've got to be careful how restrictive we make it, or it's going to be hard to really push our program to stay competitive, creating numbers of horses and quality of horses. New York quality horses are pretty good. It's a pretty well-respected worldwide. It's very competitive here. We're looking at a cycle where you're going to see more, if we make it available, more new high-end stallions are going to come to New York because the perennial champs are getting old. So somebody's going to come chasing that carrot soon. And we'll see that, you know, very soon, I believe. We got to make it as fair to New York as we can to drive the agricultural side, but we got to make it palatable to the guys that want to spend the money to.
I wasn't questioning the stallion law change. I was talking about the mare. We gave up back in, 2014 when it moved to a year. So, you know, and that was, sounds like it was done for good reason. But I'm saying the other component is the mare. And are we doing enough to reward those folks that are keeping their mare here all year round, maybe, or through the foaling season? That's all I was asking.
Exactly.
That it's the stallion thing. It sounds like
two
it was done
to
for a good reason.
You can punish people, or you can give people an incentive to be here. And I think, obviously, a larger discussion that we're prepared to have here, but I think one that needs to involve more people in the industry is, you know, what does the future of breeding of horses look like in New York State for the next 5 or 10 years, 20 years perhaps? What can we do to help that be a good thing, a good situation?
In line with the contracts that are being bid on at this time, getting some real feedback, not at the very end of the year. Things like Pete talked about, on this, doing this at the end of the breeding season where things are fresh in people's minds, what can we do? Our relationship with harness horse breeders is a sole source. They've done some really good things for us. There's 10 people that sit in that room. Active participants are probably less than 10. There's some of them that didn't know the schedule that they created for us in December till almost February this year. It's still on that board. So we need to get some more real-time information back on things like this. What do they need? And that needs to come to us so that before we change and adapt new policies, we know what people want and the 4 or 5 people in that room that are paying attention.
And the other thing, too, is why we need to change after July so we can do it for 2018 is a procedural thing. I think that's going to be part of it's what's in the RFQ is even though we're supposed to do the 1.5 times, the check come in, they only paid the regular registration fee, and there was nothing from harness horse breeders to say that the horse was out of here to the fund to let us know. So we ended up sending a letter back to Rock and Roll Heaven's people and telling them to do the 1.5 times. by getting rid of the two-year rule, the reentry rule, we wouldn't have to worry about that process of did they screw up and the source didn't come in, you know, 1 to 1.5 times. It's one less thing that we have to do on administrating. And not to change the, the other thing was, I got one more thing on stallion eligibility, is what Alice brought up, the unsigned leases on some of these stallions. We've had a little discussion on that at another meeting. I think, Jackie, you were there on that at Schenectady, I think, in last November. Mark kind of explained that to us about the leases unsigned. Could you?
Yep.
I have people trying to, I can't remember it, so you can explain it to me. So
here's the way that it breaks down. So we knew that people were sending in leases and they weren't signed. Who determines whether it's a valid lease or not? The fund gets determined for the purposes of the breeding awards and for ownership awards. That is their job to determine whether it's a valid lease or not. Whether it's signed or not, listen, we're not in privity with the lease. So the people who need to make sure that it's signed are the two parties. If they're submitting that lease and saying, these are the terms by which we wish to enter the program, and they follow the terms that they submit, they're in good standing with us, right? We make that determination. It's reserved for us under general practice and common law, which is you're the executive, you get to decide what's a lease and what's not a lease, okay? For the purposes of executing your program, all right? So what happens if someone breaks the terms of a lease? Now we have an issue, okay? Now we can go after them and say, you're not qualified. You haven't followed the terms of the lease that you submitted that you were then qualified for participation in our program. So the signature is on the bottom, sure. In law, you want to go into court, that judge is going to ask you for that. But we're accepting it as proof that there's a meeting of the minds and you're going to abide by these terms. And if we wish to determine that that's what we're going to gauge compliance, that's up to us. That's within your authority. Now, if going forward we decide, yes, we do want signatures, that's also within your authority, okay? But for all the leases that were accepted previously, we don't need to go back and rehash them because, as I mentioned before, with the other terms that were included in the conditions, even though we don't have any meeting minutes that show that this was endorsed or was approved, but the fact that they were accepted, we have to presume they were accepted and endorsed by the board at that time. There's nothing to prove that they weren't. So we have to assume that when they were given status, they were put into a stallion directory and all these other things that go along with a positive application, that it was given due diligence and it was accepted by proper authority.
That's going to trouble you as an attorney going
forward.
That
there's no signature?
That there's not a signature.
Well, that's where we're going to require signatures going forward.
And did HHB put those in the directory? Look at the lease. Where does the lease come in?
The lease comes in through HHB as the agent for us right now.
And they put it in the book. And
right.
So
what we're going to require signatures.
And it's pretty fundamental.
Here's one other thing. When these leases came in back in the day, I mean, these are
sure,
back in 2008, 2009. That was back when Peter Gould was the executive director. I don't think HHB collected the leases, and I think they went right directly to the ones that we have in question, went right directly to the fund back then. But see, right now, we have it. But like I said, that's one of the good things about the one-year lease is everybody is willing to sign for 1 year. I mean, that's the way I look at it as far as the leases go. So
it sounds like fundamentally going forward, there will be signatures on leases.
Yes. Yes. Right.
And
we can't speak to what prior awards.
No, they accepted them. We have to accept that they received them.
Right.
And how will the process work, though? The lease will come into where? Where will the actual paper signed lease go into?
With the RFQ, it'll actually come into our administrative, whoever gets the RFQ. Then they should present it to the executive director or the acting executive director, and then we get a report on what's coming in.
Okay.
And again, what we're trying to do
is we're trying to rehabilitate our record keeping as well, because there are missing records, which is problematic for obvious reasons. But we're going to be setting up a filing system that is going to be rigorous and in accord with the records retention program established by the New York State Archives, which every agency follows.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay. Well, we wandered around the barn a couple of times here. All right. Well, thank you. I think we've discussed this a lot. Can I have a motion to approve the eligibility conditions as presented?
I'll make a motion to approve the eligibility conditions.
Mike has made the motion. A second?
I second it.
Peter? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So carried.
One other question, just looking at, on top of this, this should say 2017.
Okay, we'll put it in there.
Okay. And I'm just looking at what's going on. Then next year, it'll say for 2017 breeding season, when we redo these, it'll say 2018 breeding season.
Yep.
Okay. Then these will go on our website, and then we'll be kept record on there, so you can go back and look at the changes through the years coming up.
Mm-hmm.
And,
okay. Thank you. Duly noted. Any new or old business to come before the board?
Talking to me on the phone last night coming down, I think we've talked about this before, was are we going to get that directive done before the sire stakes start for having 5-horse and 6-horse fields like the thoroughbreds have, where they can have the exotic bets? I think right now, what do we have, 6 and 7-horse fields we got to have?
You can go down to, do you mean for the finals or?
Oh, for everything during the year.
I know that we adjusted that last meeting.
Yeah,
we talked about it, but we said you were going to try to get done through a directive, and whether it's going to get done or not, that's all I want. And I know Potato Downs is asking, because we have quite a few sire stakes to add 5-horse fields, and then they're down to put in place betting. That's it. There's no trifecta betting. There's no superfecta betting. There's nothing. Where the thoroughbreds, they can...
We just did that really on the thoroughbred side.
Yeah. And you said we were going to do that on the harness side. But I know...
Well, I didn't say that. I just said we make the suggestion to our legal people. And
well, that's my my question is, where is it at? Is it going to get done, or...
Right.
Or do I have to have the rest of the race and then just start dialing up and putting pressure on
it? It's on the list of things to do.
I know. My trying now, but it was 3 years. I just didn't want to.
I know, but you don't want to go through that.
So, I'm just relaying the message.
Okay.
I'm not the track owner, so it doesn't have nothing to do with me, but we're trying to
bring that parity. Because you don't get to pick 4, 5, and 6 in thoroughbred.
One of the things, like, when you're doing scheduling and everything, everybody thinks, they just look at themselves, but, when you do scheduling, another thing with scheduling is you're trying to help the track have a good program for the night, too, when you're trying to, get them to make some money. You're trying to bring the people into back and stuff. I mean, I know it's a losing battle, but some people are still trying, so.
No, I know. What did you talk about then?
Scott Warren, our secretary of Vernon Downs. And I know he sent you guys a letter before on this a couple of years ago.
I think you're talking about the number of horses in the race. You're talking about show wagering.
Well, as I'm saying, the number of horses in a race.
Yeah.
I think right now we're at 6 and 7 to have the exotic wagers. We want to get it down to 5 and 6 like the thoroughbreds.
Okay, right. That has been discussed with our legal people.
Okay. May 20-something is our first sire stakes, so.
Yeah. Can we have that for our next board meeting?
Let me talk to Mr. Burns.
Yeah, because everything is proposed. And we have a number of proposals that are still out there that have to come back for final approval, so.
I'll have to listen to some of real tapes, I think you said. I'll get that done for you by next Thursday.
It wouldn't be me, it would be there.
Can we get it to the governor's desk, right?
Well, I wouldn't have to. It would be the gaming commission.
But it's trot models.
And I think, let's see, took care of the county fairs. Display releases that are not assigned. That's about it for me. Okay.
motion to adjourn.
We have a motion. Can we have a second?
I second it.
All right, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, so carried. Thank you all for being here. We will be circulating dates as the calendar gets cleared up after the budget.
Which will probably be in Goshen.
Yes.
Oh, wait, the March one's in Goshen?
April.
As well.
That's yours. Thank you.